Heavenly Father, we thank you for these public servants, the sacrifices they make to serve us and the sacrifices their families make as well. We pray that you would give them great wisdom throughout their deliberations today. We thank you for answers to prayer for a good snowpack and good precipitation this season. We pray for peace and prosperity in our neighborhoods throughout our county. Amen.
Thank you very much. Now is the time for a public comment. Anyone having any questions or comments on anything not on today's agenda, now is the opportunity to speak. You have 5 minutes, up to 5 minutes, to discuss your concerns. If not, we'll go then now to consent calendar. Is there anyone on the board who wishes to pull any item? If not, before the board takes action on the consent calendar, does anyone in the audience wish to make a comment or have a question on any matter on the consent calendar? If not, we'll bring it back to the board. We will now go to A4. Excuse me.
Motion to approve consent calendar.
Is there a second?
I will second that.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Passed. Now we will go to A4. Madeline Scheffler will introduce Jack Woodford, Mental Health Board Chair. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairman Monteith.
Good morning.
Supervisors, Mr. Rise and Mr. Doring. Thank you for allowing me a few minutes to talk about mental health awareness. This is Mental Health Awareness Month, and want to just a brief some statistics and some comments about living with a mental health condition. 1 in 5 adults experience some form of mental illness, and 1 in 20 experience a severe form of mental illness. Yesterday we had a great presentation from one of our youth leaders that's part of our Youth in Mind group. According to her, 50% of the time mental illness begins by the age of 14. And 70% of youth in juvenile hall are living with mental illness. So stigma often prevents people from getting help. And as with any illness, the sooner you do something about it, the better. Individuals living with mental health challenges do get into recovery. They finish college. They have successful careers. They're creative. And they give hope to others struggling with mental health challenges. Recovery requires acceptance of your situation and a desire to get help. It also requires you adhering to your mental medication regime, your yoga routine, or whatever keeps you well. It requires staying connected with your social support system, be that faith, family, and or friends. Recovery isn't about how you are to get back to where you were before, but it is about building something new, which is an anonymous quote. At this time, I'd like to announce that Mr. Jack Waldorf will accept the proclamation upon your approval of it.
Thank you. May we entertain a motion by the board to accept the proclamation?
Somebody want to make a motion?
Yeah, I'll make a motion. We accept the proclamation.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? It's passed. Jack, would you come forward, please? Jack, it is our pleasure to present to you this certificate recognizing the proclamation, which is recognizing the Mental Health Awareness Month in Stanislaus County. And it's particularly a pleasure to present it to you because I know that you have been involved so many years And I want to commend you and the board members of addressing the challenges throughout the year. Those on the board are not those who've just come lately. They've been at this for a long, long time and have a great understanding. And we do appreciate your commitment. But we've proclaimed May as the Mental Health Awareness Month. And I would like to present you this on behalf of the Board of Supervisors. And would you like to say a few words, Jack?
Well, I just like to say thank you for your support. And thank you on behalf of the Mental Health Board, Behavioral Health and Recovery Services, all those in the county who have a mental illness, and especially those homeless people that have a mental illness. And I know you're very concerned about them. So thank you very much.
Well, congratulations once again. Job well done. Thank you. We will now go to scheduled matters, 9 a.m., the public hearing to approve Americans with Disability Act. That will be Matt Machado and Eunice Love. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, Mr. Eisen, Mr. Doring, Matt Machado, Director of Public Works. And with me this morning is Eunice Lovey. She's our transit manager. This morning, I'm going to give the presentation, and if you guys get too technical on me, I'm going to have to turn it to Eunice, so just giving you a fair warning on the front end here. The item before you is the is a public hearing for the first reading of our ADA plan, and this is a new program we have, and it was caused by our 2010 census, where we became a larger urbanized area. And so as a result of that 2010 census, we are now eligible for some new monies, FTA 5307. But with that new money comes some new requirements, and this is a part of it right here. This is a new ADA paratransit service. So the ADA law ensures equal opportunity for persons with disabilities to use our public transportation service. So that's what we're creating. It applies to all systems that have fixed route service, which we do. And so we'll be providing this new service to persons with disability. And we have a plan before you today. The paratransit service area is countywide. We'll be providing the service countywide. We'll be setting fares for this service. It's a reduced fare rate. And then, of course, the vehicles we'll be using will be ADA compliant. We'll have procedures to certify people, so not just anybody can use this service. They have to come in person, actually. We'll have a program set up so that we can ensure that they qualify, that they are truly disabled. And we'll provide the level of service needed to meet the needs. Some of the outreach we've done, we've met with groups serving the disabled folks. We've had meetings with CSA and HSA, 8 open houses. We have received positive feedback, and there is definitely public support for this new service. Staff recommendations this morning include conducting and opening a public hearing to approve the ADA complementary paratransit service plan. Staff recommendation also includes adopting the attached resolution per the FTA requirements and authorizing the Public Works Transit Division Manager to implement the plan in our service area. So I'm keeping it simple today, and now I'm turning it back to you for questions and comments.
Anyone on the board having any comments or questions? If not, open it up to the public. Anyone wishing to make comment or ask any concerns? If not, I bring it back to the board. And any concerns or action?
I will make a motion to approve staff recommendations.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Passed.
Thank you
very much. We now go on to the 905 public hearing to consider the adjustment of fees as follows. A, Jamie Agers.
Good morning, Chairman Monteith, Board Members, CEO Risen, County Council Doring, Jamie Agers, Director of Environmental Resources, and next up, Parks and Recreation. Joining me here at the table for the DER fees is Daryl Yorkey, Assistant Director. So we have a variety of new and amended fees for DER that we'd like to review with you briefly this morning. Starting with our Hazardous Materials Division, we have several new fees we're proposing, one for the newer California Electronic Reporting System, which we call CSRS, a CSRS fee, a change of ownership or transfer fee consistent with the same fee we have in many areas of the department, monitoring wells and soil borings, and the destruction of monitoring wells. In our Environmental Health Division, we're not proposing to change any existing fees, but we are suggesting three new fees, all dealing with various water well construction permits. First, a transfer fee from one driller to another. We're seeing that a lot with all of the well drilling activity. Also, a permit extension fee. This is a time extension permit because often they can't get to the well within the standard 12 months that the permit is good for initially. And lastly, an amended fee, which is typically moving a well location from one place to another. In our milk and dairy program, we're proposing several new fees. First, a proposed change to plan check, rescores, where we have to go back out and rescore a facility, an on-farm compliance inspection, two fees dealing with having to go out and take extra samples, be it of milk or water, and lastly, a new application for grade A dairies. For amended fees, starting with our hazardous materials program, last year we came to you and proposed increases in a couple of hazardous materials fee categories, and we had shared with you that it would be a gradual increase over a period of a few years. So this is year two of proposed fee change for our above ground storage tank program. It's roughly a 10% increase, and in our farm disclosure program, approximately 11% increase. Again, in our milk and dairy program, this is the first revamp of these fees since 2008, and we are proposing an across-the-board fee increase of about 11.4% increase, and we will be bringing this back to you as well in future years. And while we are increasing the per-gallon charge, nearly all of our dairies will hit the maximum charges that you see for the various categories. Again, in our milk and dairy program, some changes to the other hooved mammals categories for grade A and B as well. And we're actually proposing a decrease in our change of ownership fee from what was the 6-hour minimum charge down to a 2-hour minimum charge. For the ash that is disposed at the landfill from the waste energy facility, we adjust this fee every year. It's tied to CPI. Some years it has gone down. This year it's going up ever so slightly, 1.3% increase. And a couple of modifications to other landfill fees. The first deals with the category of mattresses. We have recently signed a state contract, and for those mattresses that come in from the residential sector, if they are deemed to be recyclable, which means they have to be in pretty good condition, they will actually be free. So we're modifying that category to reflect that. And we'd also like to add bulk drip line to our hard-to-handle category of materials. And lastly, In our hazardous materials program, we're suggesting to eliminate the existing category for monitoring well permits, dealing with the first well and each well thereafter, and replacing that with monitoring well and soil boring fees. That's to more accurately reflect what's happening out there today. We conducted stakeholder meetings on February 29th, and overall the feedback was favorable. We published our public notices in late February, and we've had the information posted on our website as well since then. And with that, we would like to introduce and waive the first reading of the ordinance to establish these new and amended existing fees for the Department of Environmental Resources. If approved, these would be effective June 24th, with the exception of the landfill fees, which are always effective on July 1st. And with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Anyone on board wishing to comment or question at this time?
I just was curious how many people showed up at that February 29th meeting.
Just a handful.
And so take it then there's not any opposition to this.
We think we've done a pretty good job of outreach.
Anyone else having comment? Yes.
Yeah, I think it's important to acknowledge that most of these fees haven't been raised since 2008, and with this board and our staff acknowledging that there were some tough times. And when you do that, you get behind, and this is the adjustment that's necessary. And in some cases, it's a state mandate. I don't know. I'm looking through all of our programs as we went through our board briefing. Sometimes we're trying to recoup some of the cost increases that were passed on by state mandates. So with that, again, I'm going to support this. No one likes fees, but I think you've done an outstanding job of justifying. So thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
And just to pile on there a little bit, that we always say this every time we have fees before us, but these fees are just to cover our costs. There's never a profit made, and there's never money being made. If anything, we're covering our costs, I guess, at the most. And so and hopefully at these public meetings, even though there's not a room full of people, that's expressed to them also, that this is just to cover our costs that we incur through the process. So anyway, I'll support this.
Anyone else on the board wishing to make comment or question? If not, I'll now open it to the public. Anyone having any concerns or comments? If not, I'll bring it back to the board and would entertain an approval.
Yep. Motion to approve all staff recommendations.
There a second?
I will second that.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? It's passed. Thank you.
Thank you.
We now will go to B, approval to introduce and waive the first reading of an ordinance to establish new amended existing fees for parks and recreation. Jamie Ager and Mary Mayhew.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, Mary is assistant director over a couple of divisions in DER, but also over parks. So we'd also like to present to you our recommended new and amended fees for the Parks Department. As you know, we have four regional parks, two off-highway vehicle parks, and the two reservoirs. Our revenue is approximately $2.4 million, which is used for operations and maintenance of those facilities. At the OHV parks, we also receive some grant funds from the state, which offset those costs and pay for some special projects. And every year, we take a close look at the park's fees and evaluate the cost of services provided in comparison to the fees. The evaluation this year indicated a need to continue to increase revenue in order to maintain a balanced budget as costs continue to rise, but we are also working toward lessening our reliance on general funding. Our day use and camping fees were last amended in 2011. This year's fee survey of similar facilities found that the proposed fees are comparable to other parks, with the exception of the day use fee, which is slightly higher, but this would be paid by out-of-area visitors. We're recommending one new fee, which is a refundable deposit for the very, very large events. That would be the symbiosis type events. And we're suggesting several fee increases to the following areas: our day use fees, camping fees, annual passes, what we call a late exit fee, kind of like a late checkout fee at the hotel, our fireworks show event, the picnic shelter. This is the one at Woodward, and this would be to make that on par with the other picnic shelter rental fees that we have elsewhere in the county, our dog field trial training fees, and group campsite fees. We're suggesting one that we're calling a discount fee. This would be for day use for the local residents, and basically it would remain unchanged from its current rate of $10. So we're, in other words, not proposing to increase this fee. For parks, our stakeholder meeting was conducted on February 17th. We did have a few attendees there. Some clarifying questions were asked, and one positive comment was received from one of our seniors. They were happy that we were not proposing to increase the senior day use fees. There were a couple of concerns raised regarding the proposed increases in exclusive use fees, because we initially looked at a more broadly increase in those fees. But as a result of those comments, we chose to only bring forward the large event deposit fee because we don't want to discourage the smaller events from happening in our parks. The Park Commission moved to support the fees at their February meeting, and public notices were printed in late April and early May. And also, this has been posted on our website. So again, our recommendation is to introduce and waive the first reading of an ordinance to establish these new and amended existing fees for the Department of Parks and Recreation. And if approved, these fees would be effective June 26th. With that, we'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Anyone on the board wishing to make comment or questions at this time?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I just want to speak a little bit on the park fees in full support of this agenda item. Our Parks Department has done an absolutely incredible job improving our park system, especially Woodward. And we're attracting a lot of out-of-county residents. Being that we spend taxpayer money in this, Stanislaus County residents should get a break. So I'm in full support of this. And again, I just want to congratulate you on a job well done out there at Woodward.
Thank you. You have to come out and see the new. It's a 10 plus.
Anyone else on the board wishing to make a comment or a question? If not, I'll open it to the public at this time. Anyone who has concerns or comments? If there are none, I'll bring it back to the board and entertain a motion.
Motion to approve all staff recommendations.
Do I have a second?
Second then.
We'll have a first and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
Pass. Thank you.
We now will go to C. It'll be Lee Lundergan. Approval to introduce and waiver first reading of an ordinance to amend existing fees for Clerk Recording Election Division.
Good morning. Lee Lundergan here for the County Clerk Recorder. Good morning, Chairman Monteith, the board members, Chief Executive Officer Risen, and County Council Doering. We are here today, I am here today, to discuss some fee changes in our office that have been long overdue. If we take a look at the history on this, there have been four fee resolutions instituted in Stanislaus County for the Clerk Recorder's Election Division fees, one in 1986, a set in 1988, 1990, and 1991. So we're here to look at two fees, in particular, one that's 26 years old and one that's 30 years old. So I look at the last person before me and think, 2011, fresh. That's not very old at all. What we're doing is we're going to be going over all of our different fees. So currently there are 34 different categories. We're just bringing the first two before you. We anticipate over the next year to go through all of them and take a look at them to make sure that they're charging what it would be the correct or right amount for our public. The first one I'm going to talk about today is a printed index, and this is to register each person's name, and people come and get this index if they are running for office and they would like to do walking. So they want to walk door to door, and they would like to get the list of names of all the people they can walk door to door for. This used to be $1.50 per 1,000 names. Code has changed. The election code has changed, election code 2184. And so this amount now by code is 50 cents per 1,000 names. So we're going to be actually reducing it to be in line with the state of California. The other one we're looking at is the master voter file, and I think this is kind of the most interesting one. This is a 30-year-old fee. It was instituted in 1986, probably the dawn of the computer age, and they used to determine and make a master voter file by a reel-to-reel tape, which I know that's kind of hard to imagine. But the tape went from one side to the other, and it would slowly go along all day long. And so the charge was $582 for the master voter file. What is the master voter file? It is the file of the people who are the voters in Stanislaus County with a variety of pieces of information that candidates can use to run for office. So if they want to send out a mailer, you wonder, how do I get this? It's because they get it from the master voter file. After a review of the current costs, the speed of a computer now, which is practically lightning, looking at the other area councils and counties that charge for this, we are now suggesting $153. So that's quite the reduction. Right now, those are the only two things we're bringing before the board. They're both reductions, and that's about all we have to say about those. I do have lots of other things to talk about, so I don't know if you want to vote on that first and then hear me talk, or hear me talk and then vote. What is your pleasure?
If there's any questions from both.
That master voter file now is on a disk, isn't it?
Yes. Used to be this giant tape, literally huge.
Yeah, the political parties will have that information too, so there's probably not a lot of demand for it, I wouldn't think anymore.
Yeah. It's more than you think. Anybody who wants to come in and run and they're not connected directly to a political party needs to get that file. So.
Okay.
So your pleasure, would you like to vote first or would you like to hear more stuff?
I was just going to make a comment that Stanislaus County, here we are, what a great county, we just reduce our fees here.
Since 1980s.
Yeah, where else? What other counties are reducing fees?
I have a more of a rhetorical question for county council. It seems like as politicians we'd have a conflict of interest on this, being that we all run for office, but we're the ones who have to set this fee, so how do we get around that?
I invoke the public generally exception that all those similarly situated in the same class benefit by the reduction as well.
Very good. Just wanted that for the record. Thank you.
Okay. Any additional comments? Anyone in the audience have any comments this time? I'll bring back the board, and I'm going to ask you to step aside.
Just for the public comment.
Just for the public comment. Pardon me. I meant to have you. That's fine. Nice to see where you are. Okay. If there are no public comments, we'll take a motion this time.
I will make a motion to approve the reduction in fees.
There a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Passed. Now, if you wish to continue.
I'd love to tell you a few more things here, if I could, to update you on what's going on our June 7th presidential primary election. Yesterday, I sent a letter out to all of the candidates and interested parties indicating when we would start mailing our sample ballot pamphlet and our ballots. The sample ballot pamphlet will go out this week. In something a bit unusual for us, we usually try to mail everything on the same day. This time, we're going to be mailing throughout the week. So the sample ballot pamphlet will start mailing Tuesday, May 10th, which is today, and be mailed through Friday, May 13th. So it's going to go to different sections in the county at different times, and I couldn't tell you which section goes first. I don't know that. It's anticipated both the permanent vote-by-mail and all-mail precinct ballots are going to start mailing on Monday, May 16th through Wednesday, May 18th. And this is because of the large number that is going to be being mailed out and the complication of this election. I'll be talking about that in a few minutes here, but it's exceedingly complicated. Stanislaus County has a total right now of 214,830 voters, and 134,000 plus are permanent vote by mail. There's an additional close to 1,500 people who are in all-mail precincts. An all-mail precinct is a precinct with fewer than 250 voters that can all vote on the same precinct item, and they are automatically, by state law, sent a ballot rather than having a polling site. That's the first thing. Second thing I wanted to talk with you about here is this election and who you can vote for president. I sent you, or I handed each one of you a flyer on this. There are six political parties that are acknowledged in the state of California as certified. Those six parties will each get their own party ballot for this election. And we have an additional ballot which goes to no party preference, which are the people who did not select a political party. Because California has gone to top two, which is you vote for everyone is on the ballot, and you vote for the top two you like, whether they be two Democrats, two Republicans, a Democrat and a Republican. Whoever the top two people are, go to the November election. That is what a top two is. It can be done within the state of California. It cannot be done on a federal level. The federal level that we are voting on with everyone else in the United States is the office of president, and the office of president only. So our voters, although we have sent them a postcard to the ones that vote by mail and a separate postcard to the ones that vote at the polling sites, they are still confused because they will see 35 different people running for the United States Senate of every party you can imagine. But they will only see their party's preference or their party for president. And there's a great many people who don't even realize that they don't have a political party that they've selected because they have been voting for every single person. They've seen them all on their ballots for the past 4 years. So we are advising and advising and advising people that if you are no party preference, that means you have no political party that you are aligned with, which means you don't get to vote for president. And if you wish to vote for president, it gets even more complex. Three political parties are allowing the no party preference voters to cross over and select their ballot. And three are not. So the three that are allowing crossovers are the American Independent, Democratic, and Libertarian. If you are a no party preference and you can't vote for president and you go to the poll, you can ask for one of their ballots. You cannot ask for the ballots of the Republican, Peace and Freedom, or Green Party. Those are the three that are not allowing crossovers. And if you wish to vote one of those ballots, you have to re-register by May 23rd. So I'm trying to get the word out to everyone. We've done press releases. We've done a little radio thing. We've done everything we possibly can. I'm telling the boards, because I know that this is a big, good public forum, and the Turlock papers picked it up, printed something very thorough on the subject, and I'm hoping that I'll be speaking with the Modesto Bee later today and that they'll be picking it up as well. Any questions on that? It's really complex. Okay. Last two things I want to mention to you just real quickly is we are in the midst of hiring part-time election workers. So if there's anyone who would like, I don't mean the board necessarily, but if there's anyone that you know who would like to work as a part-time election worker, the recruitment is open through Monday, and they should go on the website of the county's website and go ahead and apply for that. The last thing I would like to talk about is some election updates that are very impactful of this election and every election we will hold from now on. The first one is called Postmark Plus 3. I believe I've mentioned this before, but just in case, I'm mentioning it again. Postmark Plus 3 means that on election day at 8 p.m., all ballots must be either mailed or received by our office. Postmark Plus 3 allows them, if they got mailed by that time and if they reach us by that Friday, for us to be required to accept them. I am urging everyone to vote early, not late, because if anything goes beyond Friday at 5 p.m., they will not be counted. So that's a really important aspect of change. Another aspect of change is something that is called curing the ballot. Curing the ballot takes place, it started on January 1st. We were the very first county in California to have to deal with it because we ran the election for the city of Modesto's mayoral runoff. And that took place in February, so we had an opportunity to see how this kind of works out. Curing the ballot means the voter has until 8 days following the election, if they have voted by mail and they have not signed the ballot envelope, then they can come into the office, they can go online, or they can sign a piece of paper and mail it to us, which is dangerous because you might not get it in time. Sign this thing that says they want their ballot to count, and we're supposed to connect those two things together and make them count. I can tell you that the things I have mentioned thus far are very time intensive. All of this is raising the price of elections. Right now, my staff was looking at the cost of this election and all of the additional aspects to it. And every time something like this is added, the cost increases. So don't be surprised if we come in and ask you for additional funds. And I know what Vito is going to say before. He's leaning, because he already asked me. And that is, yes, the state of California has given some funds to assist elections, but it is not without strings, and we're trying to figure out exactly what those strings are at this point in time. We received yesterday, in the midst of everything else that's going on, another petition in which we have to review all the signatures for that petition for the state of California, thousands of signatures. So the numbers are just increasing dramatically, and it's getting pretty busy on there. There's a bunch of other things going on, but the other thing that I think I would like to bring your attention to in particular is this new requirement, if I can find it on here. The UDEL election, which is the odd year election, is where we have most of our districts, most of our school districts, a couple of our major cities, Modesto and Ceres, and there's a new law that just got passed that limits district elections to even years if odd year elections have resulted in a significant decrease in voter turnout defined as 25% less than the average turnout in that district in 4 statewide general elections that have been averaged. I can almost tell you right now that is 100% of every district in Stanislaus County. So this is going to be making a great impact. They must move by the year 2022. And they must have made a decision by the year 2018, or they get fined and other bad things happen to them. So those are the updates. I wanted you to vote before you had to hear them, because they aren't the most positive things in the world. But they are a lot of changes coming up in elections. It is becoming more complex by the year. I cannot get over how many new laws they add that add these complexities, and they all happen at the same time. So any questions I can answer?
Any questions?
Lee, how does what percentage of ballots are not signed, just on an average, what do you think? And how do you notify them that they're not signed? How's that process work?
Okay, first of all, I want to make it very, very clear, never sign your ballot. A ballot is a secret ballot in California. If you sign it, it is no longer secret. Only sign the ballot envelope, the envelope that you're mailing it back in. Right. And I don't mean to, but I try to clarify that every time I get a chance. Your next question, or your question was, how do I know how many? And that is, they come into our office, we scan each voter ID. The voter ID then gives that voter credit for having voted, and then we hand go through each of the signatures to match those on their registration documents.
Okay, so what percentage do you say in an average election ends up the envelope not being signed?
You know, I couldn't tell you a percentage. I can tell you in the last one it was over 200. And by the time that people cured it and came in and signed it and did all the different things they can do, we ended up with about, I don't know, less than 50 probably that were not signed.
And how do you notify them to come in and cure it? How do you?
Well, there's been a couple different ways we've done it. One way, we have a special envelope. We put their envelope that they have signed or they've sent to us in that. We mail it back to them with one of those little sign here stickers. And a letter that says, you haven't signed this, please sign it and mail it back to us in another enclosed envelope. So it comes back. We can see all those have returned. It's been an excellent percentage returning to us.
Okay.
With this last opportunity in February, what we tried to do was we got letters ready. And the letter said, you did not sign your envelope. Please sign this piece of paper and mail it back to us in the enclosed envelope. So we had those all ready. As we scanned them, we set the ones aside that didn't have signatures, and we'll take a signature anywhere on it if they signed where the, you know, returns or some other place. So we sent those all, set them aside, scanned them, and then printed labels, and then just put them on the envelopes, mailed them out. Sounded great until they all come back. And then we have to match them to the ones that weren't signed, attach them, and they must remain attached in perpetuity. So, and then we have to hand open them. You can't machine open them. I mean, so we're still working on the process. Okay. It's not a large number. It can be a meaningful number, however, on a small election.
Okay. Any other comments? Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate the information.
Thank you for voting for our reduced fees.
Okay, fine. We will now go to item D, approval to introduce and waive the first reading on an ordinance to establish new fares, amend and eliminate existing transit fares for Stanislaus Regional Transit. Matt Machado, Eunice Levy.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, Mr. Risen, Mr. Doring. Matt Machado, Director of Public Works, and with me is Eunice Levy. I'll be giving a brief presentation, and Eunice will back me up if I get crossed up here. The item before you this morning is a approval to introduce and waive the first reading of an ordinance to establish new fares, amend and eliminate existing transit fares for our Stanislaus Regional Transit System. So a little background, some of our fare changes were triggered again by our new eligibility of FTA funds, which goes back to the 2010 census. So the 2010 census not only put us into a new urbanized area, it also is going to trigger a change in our fare box ratio. And so we've had to look at our entire fare structure to accommodate both of those needs. The FTA funds require the paratransit service and reduce fares for our seniors and disabled. So we'll look at those here momentarily. So we've established a handful of new fares. We've adjusted most of the other fares to comply with these federal statutes and also to meet our new fare box ratio, which our new fare box ratio is going to go from 10% system-wide to 15%, so it's a substantial increase. That's the combined between all the different services we provide. And so here is a bit about our changes. Our fixed routes are fairly moderate changes. I would bring your attention to the senior and disabled. That's a decrease down to 80 cents, and you'll notice that that is half of what our proposed general fare is, which is $1.60, and that is the federal requirement that we provide half fares for seniors and disabled. I would also add that seniors are defined as 65 years or older, and so we'll see that throughout this document that the decrease of senior and disabled fares are half of what the proposed general fares will be. The next piece is our bus card, the 2020 rides, and you can see the changes there. Then we go to our fixed route with our 31-day pass. You can see the adjustment there. Again, the senior and disabled is half of what the general fare is. The employer's pass program, that's a new program. We were approached by some of our local businesses. Mainly it was Amazon out in the Patterson area. And their question was if we could offer a program, a reduced fare program for the employees. And so you see this before you to respond to that need. We will establish it at a minimum of 5 passes for a business to take advantage of this program. It's a $2 reduction for a 31-day pass, so pretty good program. Another new program is our one-day pass, ride as much as you like. And again, you see the senior and disabled is right at half of the general fare. And then no changes to our Route 70. And then our dial-a-ride system, very little changes there. continuing to look at our intra-city dollar ride service, moderate changes. And then we get to our ADA paratransit service, and this is the plan that you approved earlier this morning. I would add that this ADA paratransit service, it's not only a response to FTA requirements, I would also describe it as our door-to-door service. So Dial-A-Ride today is a curb-to-curb, and this is a door-to-door where we actually go to the front door and help people from their home into our bus. And so you can see the this is a new program, so you can see the proposed fares for each of the categories.
Matt, can I stop you for a second?
Yes.
Could you explain the difference between MOVE, door-through-door service, door-to-door service?
Sure. So MOVE provides services. They actually support some nonprofits to provide this service door-through-door. They actually go into your home and help you out of your bedroom or your wherever, out of your house. We don't go into the home. We just catch you at the front door and help you physically to the bus and then help load you into the bus. And so they're complimentary services. I would add that MOVE also educates our citizens to use our service. And so they've been very helpful in increasing our ridership to people that historically have not used our service because they didn't think they could. And so we complement each other. Yes, thank you for that clarification. And then another new service that we're proposing is our commuter bus service. And this will be a large commuter bus, three-axle, full-size bus that will go from Turlock to Patterson and then to the BART station. This is in response to the need we've heard from the public, and so we're excited about this new service. I would also add that all of these fare changes would be effective August 15th, and that's also the effective date of this new commuter service as well. So it's coming up later this summer. So we're pretty excited about this one. You see the changes to the Medivan, which is a very popular service. This goes to the Bay Area, UCSF. We've actually replaced the bus recently with a larger bus because of service demand, and so it's been a very successful system. To get to where we are today, we've done considerable outreach. We've met with groups servicing the disabled. We've held meetings with CSA, HSA, 8 open house meetings. We have received positive feedback, and our new half-fare policy has been well received by seniors and disabled, and there's public support for this change. Even the increase for those that are proposed. So we think we're going the right direction. So today the recommendation is we're asking you to conduct a public hearing to introduce and waive the first reading of an ordinance to establish new fares, amend and eliminate existing transit fares for Stanislaus Regional Transit. And with that, turn it to the board for any questions or comments.
Any other comments or questions, board?
Matt, just real quick, what percentage, it seems like I'm asking everybody what percentage today, what percentage of seniors, of our ridership is seniors?
Eunice, any idea of what the senior ridership is?
65, yeah.
Percentage of our total ridership?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering how this is going to affect getting to the fare box ratio as we cut this in half.
Right. So with all fares, and this is annually, and it's going to be even more important going forward, we'll monitor that because we may have to adjust again. So, you know, we do the outreach, we get a sense of where we think we ought to be, and then we watch it. Mm-hmm. Our fare box historically has been around 13%, and so getting to 15 is going to be a bit of a challenge. We do get a reprieve for, is it 1 year or 2 years?
3 years.
3 years. So we get a reprieve in these early years with these new programs. Because what they, state and federal, they say, well, you get a new program, you get a little chance to get up and running before you start having to count the 15%. So that's the time we'll watch it, and we'll see if that number is right, if we're targeting it correctly.
So I guess it's not only seniors and disabled. So I mean, it's not like it's 50% of our ridership. It's
No.
Yeah.
I want to say about 5 to 10%.
Okay.
Thanks. Any other concerns or comments by the board? If not, I'll open it to the public. Any comments or concerns? If not, I'll bring it back to the board and to entertain a motion.
Motion to approve all staff recommendations.
Second?
I will second that.
We got to lower the fee, so now we'll raise Amber. raised.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Passed. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We now will go to correspondence.
This board has received a letter from Assemblymember Adam Gray regarding his and other agencies' concerns related to the Bay Delta Plan, which governs the flows from the Merced, Tuolumne, and Stanislaus Rivers.
Referred to the Department of Environmental Resources and the Chief Executive Office.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office, Risk Management Division. Thank you. We'll now go to the Board of Supervisors reports. Anyone have any report? If not, then we'll go to the Legislative Fiscal Management Report, Chief Executive Officer.
Yeah, real briefly, we are anticipating the governor to release his May proposed budget revise this Friday. There are rumblings that state revenues are now significantly under projection for personal income tax. So we'll watch this closely to see if we're beginning to see a slowdown. And then for the North Valley Regional Recycled Water Project, they reached a significant milestone last Friday when the regional director for the Bureau of Reclamation signed a record of decision, which will allow the project to continue moving forward. That's my report for this morning.
Thank you. This meeting is adjourned, followed by a closed session. County Council, Mr. Dorn.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have a closed session this morning to have conference with legal counsel to discuss existing litigation involving two cases pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision D1. First case is People versus Constance Robinson et al., Stanislaus County Superior Court, case number 3017648. And second is County of Stanislaus versus City of Modesto, Stanislaus County Superior Court, case number 667397. We do not expect to report out on either of these matters.
Okay, thank you.